The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties and many of those under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first out-of-state property in the next 4 months, then I encourage you to check out my free training that'll break down the process and show you exactly what it takes to invest out of state. I purchased properties out of state and it's changed my life. The same is possible for you. You simply need the right information. My free training will help you take that next step towards buying your first out-of-state property. You can watch the training right now at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode. Again, you can find it at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue, and the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
If you're someone who lives in an area where it's so expensive to buy real estate and you feel like it's impossible, then I have something for you. I just released a free guide that's going to give you the 8 steps you need to take to buy your first out-of-state property. I've bought several properties out of state, living in California, investing in Ohio, and you can do the same. It's just a matter of having the right information. So click the link in the description of this episode to get your free guide today.
Welcome back to the Black Real Estate Dialogue. And today's Investor Spotlight features Cheryl McKissick Daniel from episode 160. Cheryl is the president and CEO of McKissick, the nation's oldest minority and woman-owned design and construction firm. And not only that, but it is a family business. And so this is such a great spotlight because it talks about Cheryl's family, how they got started in the real estate business. This is over 230 plus years in the business. And this is Cheryl's perspective on how they got started. So without any further ado, let's talk about it. Cheryl McKissick, episode 160, the Black Real Estate Dialogue. Let's go.
So I was doing some research and I actually had an opportunity to watch some interviews with your mother. And
I didn't get to her, did I?
No, we'll get to her. You're good. And so I know, you know, there was a period of time when she stepped in and took over the company. And in the interview I was watching, she was mentioning like she didn't really know anything about architecture or the business. And she was just documenting, you know, what she went through. So I'd love to hear from your perspective, just some of the challenges she faced and, you know, how that inspired you just watching her persevere and succeed.
Yeah. So when Moses McKissick the third, my grandfather and his brother, they left the business to my father,
right,
who was William McKissick. And we used to call him a good old boy because, I mean, he, no, I'm serious, because he really didn't have to do anything for contracts. You know, he didn't write proposals or anything. It was just on handshake.
Wow.
And so my mother literally, she said she only knew the telephone number to the office because she hadn't been to the office in 17 years when she was thrust into being CEO. It was probably, I think it was 4 days before my twin sister and I were graduating from Howard University. And my father had a massive stroke, and we all had to go back to Nashville. Mom was already in Washington, so we all go back to Nashville. And so at first, you know, it was really around, you know, how's our father doing?
Right.
And, you know, let's get him stabilized. And then the business piece start coming in after that, when she began to realize that he's not going to be able to come back to work for a while.
Yeah.
And so she went into the office, and, you know, the first thing she had to do was assess where everything was because she literally she didn't know anything. And she had a lot of opposition. You know, there were a lot of people who felt, you know, this may be your husband's business, but you're a woman. Mm-hmm. You're not an engineer. You're not an architect. So how are you going to manage this? And she was determined. She basically, I think what kept her going is she would think about the fact that she had 3 daughters. And, you know, the 3 of us were all in architecture, engineering. We were headed in the right direction. We hadn't gotten to the company yet, but we were headed in the right direction. And she took everything she had to say, I'm going to keep this company for them. Mm-hmm. And if I can just, you know, hang on long enough, then they will come in as my support. So my father had given stock options to several of his employees. They felt like they were owners. They did not own majority of the stock. My mm-hmm. mother did. So she had to deal with them around a boardroom table and their attorneys coming in, you know, trying to tell her, okay, you may be the owner, but we don't want you to be the president. We don't want you to run this company. Mm-hmm. And my mother said, I'm definitely going to run this company. And she has a master's degree in psychology. Mm-hmm. And I always say that she's able to understand the manias and the phobias of people that can't understand why a woman can run a business. And so she was determined.
Yeah.
And she did it. She was one of the best salespeople the company ever had. She sold business all the way up to Washington, D.C. And so there were several businesses. It wasn't just the architecture engineering mm-hmm. business. She had to deal with the construction business, which she didn't understand how that operated. Mm-hmm. Daddy's partner came in one day and gave her a bag full of cash. Said, this is your cut. And she's like, cut for what? And that's when she said, you know, something's not right about this business. I think I need to get rid of this. And she did.
Yeah.
He owned real estate. We owned College Hill, which were apartments right next to Tennessee State. Mm-hmm. So mom had to handle that. You know, she had to deal with the realtor and, you know, renovating and everything you have to do around an apartment.
Wow.
And then he owned Debonair, which was another apartment complex. So she had a lot to do, and then property everywhere.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my father was a man's man. He, you know, he didn't really go home. First of all, he didn't expect anything was going to happen to him. Mm-hmm. I think if he had, he would have set things up a little better. But mom did extremely well. She was able to get a grasp on that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is extremely inspiring to me. She always felt like women were equal. She always felt black people were equal. And she just never had a problem walking into a room full of men. A room full in Nashville, all we had was white and black.
Yeah.
That's all we had.
Yeah.
Now we have a whole lot more. But my mother had no problem doing that.
Yeah.
She became like a peacock in society, if you ask me. She integrated the Swan Ball, which was the elite arts community of Nashville. Mm-hmm. And then she sued the city of Nashville over the airport when they did not let one contract to a minority. And although she sued, they blackballed her for about 5 years, but they gave a contract to another minority firm. And she thought that was a win.
Wow.
It didn't bother her really that she didn't get the work, but that mm-hmm. she opened up a door. She kicked through a door.
Definitely.
probably 20 years after she sued the city of Nashville, the attorney that was on the other side saw mom and I out to lunch or dinner. I can't remember where it was. And he came over and he kneeled and he said, you are an amazing woman. And you were right at that time. I mean, it was.
That's deep.
It went 20 years later for, you know, her to, you know, get her flowers from this man that had, you know, gone after her extremely hard. And today she's the same person at 92. At 92, she's the same person.
Yeah.
You know, I remember my early days in New York, and I'm building, you know, I got great contracts, but I needed to build more. I needed to make that next level move. And I called mom because I'm looking at TV. Mm-hmm. And there's Pataki. He's our governor. And I said, Mom, and I just talking, Mom, if I could meet that man, I think it would change things for me. And it'd be a game changer for me. So mom said, oh, I'll call you right back. And I'm like, what is she doing now? She called me back probably a day later. And she says, Cheryl, guess what? You're having lunch with Governor Pataki and the Governor Sundquist for the state of Tennessee on April whatever date. And everyone else is paying $5,000. But because you're from New York and they know who I am, they're only charging you $2,500. Wow. I'm like, I will drop everything and I'll be there.
Yeah.
I ended up flying to Nashville. And because I was the only one from New York, they sat me right next to the governor.
Wow.
And so I had Pataki next to me. I had the governor of Tennessee right across from me on a long table. And that's when I developed a good relationship with Governor Pataki. So when we got back to New York, I had a little fundraiser for him. And, you know, then he said, you know what, we should have dinner. So my husband and I show up at the 21 Club in Manhattan. I'm thinking it's a dinner with, you know, 50 people. Mm-hmm. You know, like he's invited me to a dinner where he's going to talk to, you know, a close group of friends. I get there and the maitre d' takes my husband and I over to a table with five people. I'm like, is the governor coming? They're like, oh yeah, he's coming with Patrick Donahue and Kathy Blaney. I said, it's just the five of us? He's like, oh yeah. I swear to God, I start sweating from here to here because I wasn't prepared for that.
Right.
I have learned over the years that when you sit in front of a politician, you have to have an ask. You have to have something that you want to ask. And I wasn't prepared for that. And so the governor comes in and we're sitting, we're talking, we're getting to know each other. He said, how can you help me? How can I help you? And I just put, I'm just trying to get rich here. Like, and then I just laughed because that was the honest truth. Okay. But I couldn't figure out how to change it into what I really wanted to say, which is I need more projects here. But he understood and he laughed and he said, well, New York's a great place for you to get rich.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue and be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.